There's a bug on my ceiling. It's not a spider, it's fine.
I tried to kill an ant earlier today and it would not die. I was punching the floor because slapping it didn't work. And I was like, why won't you die? You're not a tick. You're an ant. You should be squishable. And finally, I punched it to death.
Good job. Maybe you're in your weakened COVID state. It just was not happening.
I don't know. It was crazy.
Ant is indestructible. There have been lots of spider-related incidents here. Oh, there's another bug on my ceiling. That one's also a spider.
So fine.
It's just a buggy place. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie, and we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Mollywood boys.
Indeed. Really, none of the usual things.
Yeah, no, there's not singing. There's no dancing.
No.
No Bollywood boys here.
No Bollywood boys, but there are Mollywood boys. Our movie this week is Katal, which, as Katie said, is a Malayalam language film, and I really enjoyed it.
I did too. Also, before I talk about this, I just need to address the fact that my voice is not great. Katie caught COVID on vacation, y'all. It was a bummer.
This is what happens. You take 2 weeks off, you wander the world, and you come back with COVID.
You get COVID, and then you sound weird on your podcast. But anyway, so apologies for my voice. But yeah, I also really liked this film.
Yeah.
At first, I worried that it was moving a bit slowly, and I wasn't necessarily getting my attention grabbed. Mm-hmm. But I actually really like the pace of it and how quiet
Yes.
it was. It's a very quiet film that I feel like shows a slice of reality.
Yes, I agree with that. I felt that it was very quiet because it was telling the story through silence, because it was it was very intentionally about silence in a way and about a lack of communication. And so the choice to have the film be so much more told in feelings and expressions and by not even really explicitly saying what the primary conflict is in this marriage.
Right.
Until, you know, way later into the film. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. I totally agree about the pacing, though. It's like, at first I was like, okay, what are we doing here? And then it got moving and I was like, gosh, this is really good. It's so well written. It's so well acted.
Yeah.
Mamuti, man. I mean, it just blew me away. I totally understand why he's a big deal.
Yeah. I'd be really interested in seeing him in like a less subtle role too.
Me too. Yeah. I want to see him be like an action hero and beat people up, but that's just me.
Like I think he played it really, really well, but it was a softer, gentler, quieter role than some others out there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I'm totally just guessing that the type of film I just described exists in his body of work.
I would assume so, but based on that mustache. But
that's an excellent point. Yeah. When you have a mustache like that, you know that you've beaten people up in the movies, not in real life.
Exactly.
The movie was directed by Geo Baby.
Yes.
Which is quite a name.
Yep.
And I also wanted to mention Jyotika, who played Omana, who just also gave such a phenomenal performance. And really, I feel like everyone in this movie was so incredible. But it seems like, you know, we have like our two big stars, like they brought the kind of the power, and then everyone else seemed to be like a lesser known person, which I think is a really great way of doing it. It makes the story feel so much more like rooted in reality. Anything else we want to mention before we get into our recap here?
I don't think so. I definitely have stuff to say, but I feel like it is end of recap material.
Okay. Excellent. Well, then let us recap.
Let us recap.
Here we go. I know, it's like we're dusting off the podcasting gears. I don't know, whatever we have.
2 weeks is a long time.
It is a long time, yeah. But okay, here we go. We open in church, and right at the front of our congregation are our two heroes, Matthew Devasi and his wife, Omana. And so right out the gate, we're establishing that here are these two, like, God-fearing pillars of the community. We also meet Femi, who is their daughter, who wasn't at church. She seems like she's maybe a little more of a free spirit than her parents.
Yes.
Matthew, we learn, is big in the CRP party in Kerala, which I don't know if that's a real thing, but they seem to be communists, which I like.
Making a stance.
I've taken a stand. Pro-communism, socialism. I like all those things. Okay. But so we see him meeting with his fellow party members and discussing a scandal that the party wants Matthew to, like, take a stand on. And Matthew is saying he doesn't want to get involved in this kind of thing, but the guys are like, no. This is going to get you votes. You know, you're for sure going to be our candidate going into the next election. So, like, this is going to get your name out there in a good way. So Matthew goes and he's talking with this family where the daughter has fallen in love with one of the laborers that her father employs. And the father does not approve of this match, but Matthew, he sees the genuine affection between this young woman and this young man, and he stands up for the daughter. So the dad gets angry, and he storms off, and the CRP guy is like, well, you just lost us all those votes, but Matthew kind of has a moment with the daughter, and it seems very clear in establishing Matthew's character in this way that he's about the love.
Yes, he's a sweet man.
He's a sweet man. He's a good guy. He wants people to be happy. And then we cut to a somewhat tense dinner scene back at Matthew and Omana's house where we meet Matthew's father, Devasi, and Omana's brother is also there. They become important later, but I'll note now that we don't hear Devasi talk until, like, almost the end of the movie.
Yeah, which I also liked that choice.
Yes, yeah. And then we also meet, separate from this tense dinner scene, Tankan, who is the local driving instructor, and we see him break up a fight between his nephew and some other teens. I'm not totally sure of the family dynamics between, like, that's going on with, like, Tankan and his family. I'm pretty sure that when his nephew calls him uncle, it's, like, actually his uncle.
I was getting those vibes as well.
Okay, avuncular vibes.
Yes.
So Tonkin's nephew lives with him instead of with his mother, because it seems like his mother, like, married someone new, and maybe there's some tension there. So there's just some tense family dynamics. Not all of those end up being entirely plot relevant.
Yeah.
We then see the CRP party officially selecting Matthew as their candidate for the Ward 3 elections. Matthew gives a little speech saying that this is unexpected and he has a lot to learn, but he accepts their nomination. At home, we see him lying in bed on the complete opposite side of the bed from Omana. And she, I think, is, like, fully, like, rolled away and not looking at him. And he asks her what she thinks of his candidacy. And she's like, yeah, no, I think that this is going to be good for you. But soon thereafter, some shocking news breaks in the community. Omana is actually filing for divorce from Matthew. And citing that he was unable to perform his marital duties because he is gay. And again, this is not explicitly said in this moment. If, you know, we knowing something about the movie going into it, could have guessed that this is why it was, but it doesn't really get explicitly said that this is why she's filing for divorce, maybe until the trial. It takes quite some time. It's really just hinted at prior to that. Omana's brother kind of chews her out for this, saying, like, she's too old to get a divorce, and if she does this, they're never going to find a suitable husband for their daughter, Femi. And he's also like, ah, you're too well-educated. This is why you want to get a divorce. So just a lot of negativity landing at Omana's door.
I find it really interesting and valuable that they also, they focused on both people in this marriage.
Yes, yes.
In this movie, and, like, the impact of divorce and the fact that Omana is being blamed by a certain number of people for wanting a divorce when she has valid reasons.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I just really appreciate that they showed both people in an empathetic, compassionate light.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. And I think the kind of the ways and the moments that they choose to really expand on that are important.
Mm-hmm.
Unexpectedly embroiled in all of these sort of all of the divorce tensions as they're beginning to come up is Tonkin, whose nephew comes home and asks him accusingly what his relationship is to Matthew DeVossi. And more on that as the plot progresses.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew confronts Omana about her filing for divorce and why she supported him in accepting the nomination when she knew that she was planning to divorce him. And she explains that the timing of this was not planned. She filed for divorce months ago, and she didn't mean for it to come out in this moment. So Matthew goes to the party and he tells them, you know, I'll back out because of the scandal. But they say that the district committee actually wants him to run and they don't care whether he wins or loses. They just want to back a candidate like him. And I put those in big air quotes. Mm-hmm. And Matthew's like, well, what do you like what? And they just tell him to sign the paperwork.
Uh-huh.
So Matthew moves forward with the campaign, and we see them hanging up signs and handing out leaflets. We see the opposition party trying to convince a constituent that Matthew is going to be a bad influence on their children if they vote for him, and, you know, is just going to be terrible for the community. But I really appreciate that this constituent is like, I don't care about his personal life. I just wanted to fix the bridge in town.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked that whole message throughout this movie, is that it's really not a big deal that he's gay.
Exactly.
I feel like it's more of a big deal with the Christianity in town that they're getting a divorce than the fact that he's gay. And also, people are just like, no, it's fine. It's refreshing to have a movie where it's not necessarily, we're not dealing with explicit hatred on screen of LGBTQ people.
Completely, yes. It's traumatizing enough to just identify that way.
And be outed in this way. Yeah. And, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, the only tension that needed to exist in this movie was the tension in the marriage and the tension between these two people trying to figure out what they want in life. And that was sufficient. They didn't need to add the tension anywhere else.
Yes.
So I was relieved, too, that the community was largely very embracing of Matthew.
Yeah.
Matthew then goes to visit Femi at school, and he tells her, you know, don't worry about everything. This is all just going to blow over in a few days. And Femi is like, you don't need to lie to me. She says, you know, mom told me years ago about everything. I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then she says she's not mad at him. She's sad for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the end of the conversation. He leaves. She goes back to her basketball game. But they both just look like very, like, hit hard by the emotions of this moment.
Yes. Again, so many of, like, the important characters, really all the important characters, are treated with, like, compassion.
Yes.
And caring and respect. And it's just nice to see.
Yeah, and we see a lot that Femi is, she's more progressive. You know, she's in college. Yes. She's, like, 19 and in college and maybe exploring with some things for herself, I feel is sort of lightly hinted at. And seems like she really wants her dad to just get to live his life the way he wants to live it, which I think is lovely. But meanwhile, poor Tonkin, he is still getting harassed, and it's really landing hardest on his nephew, who keeps kind of overhearing this and bearing the brunt of this. And so Matthew ends up confronting Omana and asking her what he's supposed to do in response to this. Is he supposed to fight her in court? And she tells him if he thinks that there's anything that she said in her filing that is incorrect, then yes, he should fight her in court. And Matthew begs her to just understand his situation once, you know, just think about him and the election and what all of this means for him. Like, he can't even go out and campaign without this coming up. And Omana says simply, my situation is worse.
Mm-hmm. They both have valid reasons for this, you know.
Absolutely.
Causing problems. Like,
you're not at any point, I think, like, made to feel like they can't both be right in feeling hurt and feeling scared and not knowing what to do.
Yeah. It's just, it's interesting because, you know, it's like for her, it's been the past 20 years.
Right.
And for him, it's like he's been able to kind of have a loving relationship and present in a different way for the past 20 years, and now he's having to kind of reconcile his identities, and so right. now it's, like, also new for him. Yeah. But she's been dealing with this. Yeah. So it's, like, two very different situations, but same amount of pain, I would...
Right. Yeah. No, that's such a good point. Like, they've both had to keep things under wraps in a certain way, but Matthew has been able to kind of quietly live his truth in his relationship with Tongkin.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing I wouldn't have mind seeing their relationship maybe a little bit more
yeah.
developed, but I also understand, you know, the focus, they wanted the focus to be on the marriage, and, you know, they right. hinted at it enough that it seems like that was something that existed for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
But so Matthew goes with one of the guys from the party to talk to a lawyer, and she says the case could be time-consuming, so they should appeal to the higher court to speed things along if they want to try to get things wrapped up before the election. And she asks Matthew if anything in Omana's filing is true, and he says no. And she asks him about his relationship with Omana, you know, how their marriage is. And the guy from the party is just like, they're great. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yep.
And the lawyer's like, kind of need to hear that from Matthew.
Yep.
And so Matthew says that he and Omana don't talk much anymore. But after 20 years of marriage, what is there to talk about? Probably a lot, but not in uh-huh. this case. And then I think what happens, I'm not totally clear on all of the legal stuff that's happening here, but I think they end up going to, like, talk to a counselor, like, a legal counselor or a marriage
yeah.
counselor, not 100% sure, maybe both. But while they're there, like, while he's waiting to go in and talk to this counselor, some strange woman, like, comes up to Matthew and tries to pawn off an American woman she knows. Like, she doesn't say how this woman is related to her. She's just like, yep. she's American. She's like, you're still young and handsome. Like, you can get with this American woman I know. Whatever.
It's odd.
Barking up the wrong tree, lady.
Uh-huh.
But so they go in there. They're talking to this counselor, and she's saying that she's has to refer this as a case of no reconciliation because Omana is being very open and clear and honest, answering all of her questions, and Matthew is just saying nothing,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty on brand for Matthew.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Tongkin is talking to a friend who tells him that he and his nephew are the ones who are really going to suffer from this divorce because no one is going to stand by Tongkin, but they're going to stand by Matthew because Matthew has all this power and influence and money. And then we see Tongkin and Matthew actually bump into each other while Matthew is out campaigning, and they basically interact with each other like strangers, and Matthew just like hands him a leaflet. But again, that's really all they can interact with each other as at
yeah.
this point, as they're kind of trying to figure things out. This kind of leads into a montage, and during this montage, we also see Femi watching a dance performance, which ends with the dancers holding up signs that say, love yourself in rainbow letters.
Yes.
Very sweet. So then the priest from their church goes to visit Omana and her brother, and apparently the church council wants to expel Matthew from the parish. Maybe because of just the divorce, but also probably because of the homosexuality,
I guess,
since
yeah.
they're not talking about. But I do think, like, a big part of the to-do in the community is the divorce and not
right.
just the divorce because he's gay. But Omana, you know, she's standing up for herself, as she should, and saying she's not willing to compromise. And if she goes back on her decision, then she's not being true to herself and what she wants. And her brother tries to guilt her by talking about, like, oh, your family needs you. But Omana tells him that if he wants her to be happy, then he needs to stand by her.
Mm-hmm.
The CRP party then tries to manipulate Omana into dropping the case. And they like, call her and pretend to be the opposition. And they're like, oh, we're so grateful to you. You're helping us win the election. And by the way, if Matthew loses, like, we're going to make sure he can't even leave the house.
Yeah.
But Omana sees right through this. I love her response because she goes to Matthew and she's like, I'm glad at least you understand that I would be upset if someone were threatening you.
Right.
But clearly she's not falling for it.
Right. She's not angry, you know?
Right.
She's just, yeah, they're both such interesting characters.
They are very interesting characters, yeah.
And, like, worthy of respect.
Yes, absolutely. Because Matthew, like, he didn't ask for this, but he also didn't stop it. So.
No, he's kind of just floating at this moment.
He is.
I think, yeah, he's like, I don't know what to do or how to handle it. But it's like, fundamentally, though, these are two people who have cohabitated and coexisted and raised a daughter together for 20 years.
Right.
So, like, even if there's no romantic love there, there's a partnership. Yeah,
there's respect and, to a certain extent, some understanding of each other. And it's just like everything's kind of coming to a head now. But as we see it, that, you know, peace can win out the day. Mm. I think I might have cut this out of my notes, but I was also just thinking about the opposition party and how there's a part where one of the guys is from the opposition is saying, like, we don't care that he's gay. We just don't agree with his politics. And yeah. They're like, really, the CRP are the ones who are, like, politicizing his homosexuality by backing him because of that. Like, we're right. just like, we don't like him as a candidate. Yeah, which is interesting. It's also like there's sort of like there's an erasure element to that, too. So it's like that's not the ideal way of being. But I do think that's an interesting approach for the opposition to have taken.
It is when, again, I think in a lot of the movies that we watched last year, they would have been explicitly going on about how being gay is, you know,
sinful and evil and you're a bad person if you're gay.
Right, yeah. And, like, perverted and stuff. And again, we have to take note of the fact that this is set in Kerala.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is an amazing place.
It's a magical place. Right, yeah. It's
rather than another state where, yeah, it might be handled differently.
Yeah, where this is happening in a more progressive environment, where clearly, you know, there's still progress to be made, but there's maybe a little bit more acceptance.
Yep.
Anyway, so now it's time for court. Yeah. So off we go.
Also, two female lawyers.
Two female lawyers, yes.
I just you don't see that in Hollywood.
No. Well, so. Like, not only are they two female lawyers, but, like, that's not even the point.
It's not. They're just lawyers.
Are. Yeah.
But they're both women.
That. Yeah.
It's always one of those things where it's like, when I'm like, oh my God, they're both women, that's bad when I'm shocked.
Exactly.
And so I always feel like I need to call attention to it just to be like, we see you. This is great. Let's keep it up.
Absolutely. Yes. These are both very good lawyers, too. I'm proud of these ladies. But yeah, so here we are in court, and I loved this moment where Omana is the first one who's called to the stand to testify, and she's carrying her purse, and they're like, you can't bring your purse to the stand, and so she hands it to Matthew, and so Matthew's just standing there holding her purse for the entire time that she's testifying, and I just thought that was such a, like, simple way of showing, like, yeah, the respect and affection that these two do have for each other.
Right.
And yeah, he's not gonna not hold her purse. That's his wife. Anyway.
Fundamentally, they're friends. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
They have a deep bond.
They are there for each other. This is just, like, this can't go on for the reasons that are about to be elaborated upon. Matthew's lawyer is accusing Omana of making a baseless claim against Matthew, you know, and she's saying, like, oh, he's a well-respected man in the community. No one else has seen any evidence of him being gay. Omana's lawyer rightfully argues that this definitely doesn't mean he's not gay. None of that is any proof that he's not gay. And the subject of Femi comes up, and Omana shares that she demanded that they have a child, and then it comes out that they have only had sex 4 times over the course of their entire 20-year marriage, presumably for the sole purpose of creating Femi, and then no more. Omana's lawyer claims that by not fulfilling his marital duty, he ruined Omana's life, and cites other similar cases that ruled in the complainant's favor. It also comes out as she's being questioned that Omana knew that Matthew was gay because he never showed any interest in her, and she realized that he was in a relationship with Tonkin very shortly after Femi was born. She says that he denied it every time she brought it up, and so she stopped bringing it up. And any time that she tried to talk to him about divorcing, he just left the room. Mm-hmm. And again, that's pretty on brand for Matthew and how we've seen him deal with conflict so far. He's very much about avoiding it rather than engaging with it.
Yeah.
And then the judge asks her why she didn't file her case earlier in their marriage. And Omana's lawyer steps in to argue that clearly Omana lacked support from her family, so it took a long time for her to build up the courage to file a divorce. And also, homosexuality was so recently decriminalized in India, of course she didn't want Matthew to be deemed a criminal if she filed for divorce on those grounds.
Yeah.
Which is something I hadn't thought of until the lawyer brought it up. And the lawyer goes on to say that Omana and others like her are just as deserving of an apology as those who were called criminals for their sexuality, and states that 80% of gay people in India are married to straight partners. Mm-hmm. Which was a fascinating statistic that I didn't look any further into, but I would believe that a high number of people who are gay feel pressured into marriage and end up in relationships like this.
Well, and especially, again, with the recent decriminalization, you wouldn't want to draw any suspicion.
Exactly.
Before that.
Yeah. And it was so recent that it hasn't even moved to the point of being just okay.
Mm-hmm.
That transition is still in process. So Matthew then takes the stand, and his cross-examination is much more straightforward. Omana's lawyer asks if he's gay, and he says no, and then she asks if he thinks being married to a straight woman as a closeted gay man is cruel, and he says he doesn't know, that he would need to think more about that. And that's pretty much the end of it.
Yeah.
Outside the courthouse, a representative from an organization called Queerala, which is great.
Which is real.
Oh, great!
I looked it up. It does exist. It's real. Yeah.
Excellent. Love the representation.
Mm-hmm.
So this person approaches Matthew and says that they've been wanting to get in touch with him for a while and offers Matthew help and support while he's coming out. But Matthew is not ready to do that, talk about that. And so he just gets in the car and drives away.
I do just love, though, this person. First of all, I love that they were like, we are here to offer you, like, the mental health counseling that you need and the support and all of that. Like, he didn't have to seek them out. They sought him out.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could tell, too, that that guy, like, when Matthew was kind of, like, kind of just running away, that guy was like, yep, like, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see that kind of just knowing.
I agree. Yeah, there was a lot of warmth as Matthew was leaving to suggest that this was not an unexpected response.
Right.
We're here if you need us, when you need us.
And again, just to have that representation in that movie and to know that, like, someone in Kerala maybe watching that film who's thinking, like, oh, how do I come out, might then be like, oh, is this organization real? And
it is.
I really appreciated that.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, Omana's brother speaks with Matthew about the case and reveals that Omana was actually in love with someone else before her marriage, and her family didn't approve of this man. And Omana's brother says he didn't stand by her then, so he's going to stand by her now. And then we finally see a conversation with Matthew's dad, Devasi, who tells Omana that he is scared of what this case is doing to Matthew. He says he's never seen him like this before, and he asks her to withdraw her complaint for Matthew's sake. And Omana reminds Devasi that he was the one who drove her home from the hospital after she had given birth to Femi, because Matthew was with Tonkin, who had recently had an accident.
Yeah.
And she tells Devasi that she loves him more than she loves her own father, because it kind of sounds like her father was a jerk, so that makes sense. And that he's a part of why she stayed as long as she did. And Devasi says that he doesn't want to hurt Matthew, but he also just can't take it anymore. He can't live this way. He can't stand seeing her live this way. And that's that.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we see Tonkin drinking with the dad, who at the start of the movie didn't approve of his daughter's love, and he tells Tonkin that he now supports his daughter because she's all he has, and everyone fears losing the one they love, and some people miss out on love because of that fear.
Yeah.
As they're leaving, they catch Tonkin's nephew, who has been drinking. He's like a teenager. I don't remember if I mentioned that before. He's too young to be this drunk, and he's saying, like, he can't stand the abuses that he's been receiving, and Tonkin tells him that alcohol won't wash away his pain, and then takes him home. Matthew then gets a call from his lawyer that another witness has come forward against them, And another great kind of acting, directing moment, we just see Matthew, like, hang up the phone, and then it just, like, falls out of his hand. And he, like, sort of stumbles to pick it up, but he's clearly in shock. I'm assuming that on that call, we didn't hear it, but the lawyer probably told him that it was his dad.
Right.
And yes, in court, the witness is brought forward, and it's Devasi. He confirms Omana's claims, and when asked for evidence that Matthew is gay, he just says, he's my son. And he says that he's known that Matthew was gay since Matthew was a child.
Mm-hmm.
He also confesses to the part he played in forcing Matthew to marry Omana. So this is all pretty damning for Matthew and all pretty powerful behind Omana's case.
Mm-hmm.
At home, Matthew sits with his dad on the porch, where previously we had seen Matthew, like, actively avoiding and getting up and leaving whenever his dad would come out and sit with him. But finally, these two men talk. And Matthew says that his lawyer has told him that he is definitely going to lose this case, and he has realized that he doesn't want to live a lie anymore. And he says that he sees that he ruined Omana's life, and he says to his dad, you know, you raised me, but you don't understand me. Nobody can understand me in this and what I'm going through.
Right.
And dad just stands up and puts a hand on Matthew's shoulder, and Matthew just completely breaks down, asking, you know, what he did wrong.
Yeah.
And Devasi tells Matthew he did nothing wrong and that he himself is to blame, and they embrace. Matthew then talks to Omana, and he apologizes to her, saying that he was scared even for himself. And Omana then says that she did this for him as much as for herself. And she asks him if he wants to save himself and give himself the life that he truly wants and, you know, live his truth. And she then very sweetly asks him to sleep beside her that night. And they, again, just break down together and hug and sob and all of that love and support that they do have for each other that's just not marital love comes out and they're there for each other in that moment.
Yeah.
And so then we get a nice montage kind of wrapping things up. We see Femi take a video of what I'm assuming is maybe like an official coming out video for Matthew. That's at least what I kind of guessed was happening in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we also see him and Omana signing the divorce papers together. Femi is there. Everyone is looking very relieved. You know, it's the end of this difficult chapter. We also see Tonkin and his nephew helping to put up CRP posters of Matthew. Backing him in the election. Matthew helps Omana pack her things and move back into her parents' house. And we see him and Femi then working together to make dinner.
Yes.
Very sweet. The movie ends with Omana and Matthew waiting nervously at a table together.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed that they were waiting for the election results because they're like sitting there by the phone. But no, Omana is there meeting a man.
Yeah.
And Matthew, as this man comes and sits at the table with them, Matthew politely excuses himself and leaves them to talk to one another.
I love it.
Tonkin is waiting for him in the car outside, and as they drive off together with a rainbow spanning the sky, we see a poster of Matthew that says, Matthew Devasi, a historic victory.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the end of this beautiful movie. And they wrapped it up so nicely and so simply in a way that, you know, just like throughout the rest of the movie was just like there for you to kind of read it and see the love, but it wasn't like explicitly stated. And they all lived happily ever after.
Right. I loved it. Like,
yeah,
it's not a big movie.
No, it's a very small movie that has a very important message.
Yeah, and I love that throughout it, it's like the main message is love and understanding and friendship.
Yeah.
But also does kind of look at the realities and the fear around situations like this where, you know, change is scary and coming out is scary. And for both of them in different ways, this divorce is leading to major things. Yeah, I really like that it's not like one is in the right, one is in the wrong.
Yeah.
I just keep coming back to the fact it was done with such compassion.
It was done with a lot of compassion, and I feel like it's so common in Bollywood in particular for movies to be about the male characters.
Yeah.
Like, even movies that are trying to tell a woman's story will maybe tell it through the perspective of a man. And this was, in a big way, Matthew's story, because it's about him as a closeted gay man, but they told it just as much through Omana and her story and her journey. And I think that just, they could have not done that. They could have just had her be sort of the driving force behind what then turns out to be entirely his story. But they wanted to give her story importance and significance and talk to the people who are maybe living this now or have lived it in the past, like, to just represent that experience as well as Matthew's. And yeah, I think that was, it was so well done.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I actually, watching this, I had the thought that I think this is my favorite LGBTQ film we've watched.
I agree. Yep.
If only because it didn't spend any time focusing on homophobic hate.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's just like, we don't, yes, it exists. It is out there, and we do not need to necessarily give it any more attention than it already gets. And instead, let's focus on, like, the actual realities and challenges of being in this situation without that. Because that can really steal the show in a lot of ways and doesn't feel good.
No, definitely. Yeah. And other than, you know, a couple of moments that maybe were...
Right.
To kind of suggesting the reality that that does exist, but without fully developing it... and also not asking us to forgive anyone who felt that way, which is the other factor that I feel the other movies we've watched had, where it's like, not just was there that hate, but there was also the insistence that the people who expressed that hate deserved our compassion in some kind of way. Like, even, I was about to say not Nanu ladies, but even that, like, the whole thing with her dad.
Right.
Was very complicated and extremely well done and more respectful than any of the Bollywood movies we watched. Yes. But, like, you get what I'm saying. I completely agree with you. I think that this was my favorite of the LGBTQ plus movies we've watched as well.
Yeah.
I also, obviously this isn't the point, but I feel I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Dulquer Salmaan.
Just,
And just how, like, I don't know, I was watching this trying to, like, see him in his dad. And I feel like I didn't really in, like, the best possible way other than, like, their eyes. Like, I was like, they both have, like, such gentle, warm eyes where I just trust them implicitly.
Yes. I feel that.
Yeah. That was, it was something that I couldn't help keep, I couldn't keep out of my brain as the film was going, so.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that. I was just thinking, like, Mamoudi has won me over, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. He's phenomenal, and I would love to watch more of him, more of his work. It would be fun to watch movies of his, like, earlier movies with him, like, you know, I don't know exactly when he was big. I think, like, the 80s, primarily. But, like, watch movies with him as well as movies with, like, other actors who are kind of his contemporaries in Bollywood.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm just remembering now what we learned in the Romantics, that that was an era where Bollywood was really not doing well and they were turning to the South for like inspiration and ideas. So, like, I don't know, there's more for us to explore there for sure.
Yes. Add that to the long, long list of things we need to look into. But
yes, we will find a time and find a way.
Yes. Research. COVID brain got me hard.
Yeah. Very understandably. That's very valid.
Yeah, things are a little bit fuzzy up in my head. Mm-hmm. And I had some hard times with the research. So basically, Kim and I wanted to note that we are aware that Modi got reelected for a third term earlier this month, and we do think that that's worth talking about, specifically to how his policies impact the LGBTQIA community. I just was not in a place to read about it or process it or be able to deliver any sort of information. So we're gonna kick off next week with today's research, sort of.
And I'll say too, it's not just your health that is a factor here, because I have been basically living in vacation land for the last month, and while I am aware of a lot of things that are happening in the world peripherally, I have not made myself very well aware of them, so I am grateful for having a little bit longer to wrap my head around things.
Yes.
Before we have more of a conversation about that. But I appreciate the effort that you put in, Katie, to try to work through your COVID brain.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I figured I would just do a quick little kind of a recap, sort of. You know, we've mentioned before that Modi's government is Hindu nationalist, and any of our listeners living in India will obviously know and understand a lot more about his policies than we do. Yeah. But for anyone who's not living in India or maybe hasn't been keeping up with Indian politics, I figured it could be helpful just to do a quick little summary of some of the Hindu nationalist policies that Modi has put into place. Keep in mind that, like, you know, the economy has grown. There's There is other stuff that I'm not talking about that has happened. So this is just a piece of the puzzle. Yeah. But it's the piece that we're calling attention to today. Yeah. As I said, Modi was recently reelected as prime minister for a third term, but his party, the BJP, lost more than 50 parliamentary seats, which means they do not have a simple majority in parliament.
Okay.
So they thought they would, but they don't. They still won more parliamentary seats than any other party, but they've needed to work with other parties to form a coalition government. So it's this coalition that will run the country for another 5 years. And it's thought that they might have a harder time pushing through certain parts of their agenda with this coalition government than they would have otherwise.
That feels promising to me, someone who,
I think
the point of a democracy is to have to work with others.
Exactly. I know, I wish we had a representative democracy.
Yeah.
We don't.
No.
We don't. It's not fine. But so when Modi first became prime minister in 2014, he vowed that the BJP would build, quote, a strong, self-reliant, self-confident India, regaining its rightful place in the comity of nations. Of course, the BJP believes that the best way to achieve this is through Hindu nationalism, which they feel will make India stronger abroad as well as at home. So I found a PBS article on the Hindu nationalist policies that remain in place from Modi's government, and there's three that this called attention to that I'm just gonna talk about quickly. One of them I didn't know about, so yeah, it was news to me. But after winning a second term in 2019, Modi's government stripped the special status of Jammu and Kashmir, which had been semi-autonomous since 1954. It did have its own constitution and inherited protections on land and jobs, but now it is run by unelected government officials and has lost its flag, criminal code, and constitution. Important to note for those who don't know, Jammu and Kashmir are Muslim majority, which plays a factor. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
India's top court upheld the move in December of 2023, ruling that the region's special status had always been a, quote, temporary provision. It had that provision in 1954. How temporary is temporary?
That's like question. 70 years.
Yeah. So there's that. Then there is the controversial temple, which we have also, I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast, but we've talked about it off the podcast for sure.
Yeah, I think we talked about it, in the animal episode.
Yep. So just really quickly as a recap, in January 2024, Modi inaugurated a grand temple to Lord Ram in Ayodhya on the site of a 16th century mosque that was torn down by Hindu mobs in 1992. That attack in 1992 sparked riots that ended up killing nearly 2,000 people. And Modi's government spent an estimated $217 million building this temple on top of the site of this mosque. And Modi's government argues that any disagreement around this site ended in 2019 when India's Supreme Court granted the site to Hindus while giving Muslims a different plot of land. Although it's important to note that the Supreme Court at the time did call the mosque's destruction an egregious violation of the law.
Well, yeah, it doesn't seem like that should even need to be said.
Right, but, right.
Yeah, I think also important to note, too, and sorry if this was going to be a part of what you were going to say on this topic, but that Ayodhya is, like, thought to be the land that Ram, like, ruled from and came from, and so there's, just like other parts of the world, these very complicated religious dynamics around, like, who finds these places significant for what reasons. But I think the truth of the matter is that lives were destroyed. There's no denying that component of this. Yeah.
Correct. And it is symbolic.
Yep.
Making that choice is symbolic in a way that is threatening and dangerous to the Muslim population.
Right. And it's not as if this were an outlier incident, because you've stated one already, and I think are about to discuss other ways that that Muslim people have been marginalized.
Correct. Well, yes, so that brings us to the third policy that this PBS article mentioned, which is citizenship for non-Muslims. Just weeks before the election, Modi's government implemented a law that extended citizenship to many refugees while barring Muslims. The law fast-tracked naturalization for Hindus, Parsis, Sikhs, Buddhists, Jains, and Christians who fled to India from Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and Pakistan before December 31st, 2014. Although all three nations are majority Muslim, Muslim refugees are not included in this law. So everyone else gets fast-tracked for citizenship, but not Muslims. Opposition-ruled states like West Bengal and Kerala said that they would not implement this law because they found it discriminatory. Yay, Kerala.
Thanks, Kerala. And West Bengal, thanks.
West Bengal. Yep. But that did not stop Modi's government from distributing citizenship certificates to non-Muslim migrants as the voting began.
Wow. It's just so blatant. There's not even any effort to, like, hide what it is that they're doing. It's
And
not that that would make it better, but it just, it's so scary that they're able to operate with that level of obvious hate.
Yeah. And it is. It's just, it's terrifying that it is really geared towards one specific group.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I know the LGBTQIA population is also targeted by Modi's government, but, you know, I feel like in the States here, pretty much anyone who's not white or heterosexual is being targeted. Which isn't good either, but it's a bigger population that's being targeted than you know, like, the Muslim population.
Like, when you're looking at sort of the grander scale of where of who is being marginalized in the U.S. individuals may have specific hatreds, but as sort of the it is more general. It's hard to imagine that very specific targeted
one
hatred
group.
And like you said, there are other groups, and of course there's, you know, there's Venn diagrams where there are people who are both Muslim and gay, and and there's other religious groups who are not Hindu who are experiencing certain marginalizations as well. But again, it's just, it's so scary to just see that very specific targeted hatred toward one group. And it's a hatred that the U.S. is, amongst other hatreds, guilty of as well.
Anyway, it's not uplifting. It's scary.
Yeah, it's definitely all of those things. And we recognize that, again, as always, we're two white ladies in the U.S. talking about these things. But we just, you know, we want to be aware of what's happening in the world. And we also think it's so relevant to these industries that we love so much to just be aware of the world in which they're creating art. And I look forward to next week when we're both feeling like we have more of a grasp on what's happening just in our lives as well as in the rest of the world, to be able to talk about this more specifically as it relates to the LGBTQ plus community, and that being, you know, kind of the politics of this movie maybe being sort of part of the inspiration for why we want to talk about this further. And feels even more relevant that we watch this movie now than just having chosen it as something to watch during Pride Month.
Yeah, I like when we stumble into those kinds of things.
those serendipitous things.
Yes. Yeah, so certainly more on all of that next week, but that's a little taste for now.
Yeah.
So, Bollywood news.
Oh, yes. The only news I was going to say, we already talked a little bit about Kartik's new movie, Chandu Champion, but it came out and it seems to be getting a lot of really good press. I mean, I just kind of understanding that because I follow Kartik on Instagram, so maybe there's a little bit of bias there, but it seems like the movie has been really well received. There's also been so much about his physical transformation. And a lot that he's posted about, like, the shape that he was in before getting this role and the shape he's in now. And
yeah.
I hope that we have the opportunity to watch this movie and talk about it and think about the important ways of being sensitive in conversations like that.
Yes. Yeah, I'm hoping it might be available to stream in July/early August. Maybe.
Yeah, I feel like usually like 2 months from when a movie comes out in theaters, so I feel like later this summer, assuming really it ends up on a platform we can watch it on.
Yeah, I really just want to watch it like around Olympics time.
Right, yeah, because it is Olympics-y.
Right, yeah.
We'll make it a part of the rotation whenever we can, and if it's Olympics-y, great. If not, we've got other sports movies that will...
yes, top-notch sports films.
Yeah, equally as credible and important. Yeah.
Wink. Great. Any other Bollywood news?
No, that's it.
I don't have any Bollywood news. Not a shock. Pluggables.
Yeah.
Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on TikTok and Instagram. Interact with us however you normally interact with the people you follow on those platforms.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do is fine.
We're not special.
No, we are not. We are actually very unspecial. And also consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You can also leave a rating or review on said podcast platform.
Indeed.
And as always, thank you so much for listening.
Indeed. And we hope to see you on YouTube and Spotify as well, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists and add our favorite songs from the movies we watch to those playlists. It's now been a really long time since we've added something, since we had 2 weeks, and now that we've had two movies that weren't really about music. But we'll be there. We'll be back there and on TikTok, too, which is also reliant on our having a favorite song.
Yes.
If you do want to join us on YouTube and Spotify, we link those playlists in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts on Tuesdays.
Woot woot.
Woot woot indeed. Yes.
Next up.
Next up, we want to give a little love and attention to our boy Ranveer Singh, whose birthday is in early July, and we do tend to, for the Bollywood boys we love the most, celebrate their birthdays with some movies to honor them and their talents.
Yes.
But we have watched pretty much exclusively the silly, ridiculous movies that Ranveer has been in. Uh-huh. And so we want to go a little bit more in a serious direction. And so next week, we are going to be watching Lutera, which is also a movie that was recommended to us by a listener. And so we're very appreciative of them for sending us that recommendation. And it works really nicely for celebrating our boy.
Yes. I am very excited for some more Ranveer and for a new film. It's going to be great.
And how nice to... That was another thing that I was going to mention in Bollywood news is the post recently of Deepika showing off her baby bump.
Yeah.
There's been, like, several, like, publicity things that she's been doing, and it just, like, makes me so happy every time I remember that, like, soon their child will exist in this world.
Yeah. It's great. I'm really excited for them and that baby that's going to be the most gorgeous baby that ever lived. So
it really is. Like, I don't know how it could not be just gorgeous in all of the ways that humans can be gorgeous. But anyway.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I didn't realize Lutera was directed by Vikramaditya Motwane, who did Queen.
Oh, that's awesome.
And also did Devdi, which, or I should say, also did Dave D, which I have not, we haven't watched for the podcast yet, but I did watch One Deep Dark Day.
And we may delve into those deep dark waters another day.
Yes.
It also looks like he was a producer on Decoupled, which is a series that I watched somewhat recently that I enjoyed. So great stuff. Luterra, though, on IMDb, the plot description is, an aristocrat's daughter falls in love with a visiting archaeologist, but he holds a secret that could drive them apart.
Oh, okay, yes. That's the first line of my synopsis, too.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that's where mine stops, so.
Okay. Mysterious. So, Luterra is available to watch on Amazon Prime through Eros Now, if you're in the States, you know. If you're not in the States, I don't know.
Good luck to you.
But the synopsis is, in 1953, an aristocrat's daughter falls in love with a visiting archaeologist, but he holds a secret that could drive them apart. However, unbeknownst to her, he leads a double life that threatens their relationship. Okay, wait, that kind of sounds like the same sentence that was just rewritten.
It does, yeah.
Luterra is the uplifting story of two lovers, of heartbreak, betrayal, and ultimate redemption. Yeah. Someone really tried to write this synopsis and make it, like, impactful, but they were a little bit scatterbrained in doing it.
I agree, yeah.
Which I find is often the case with the Amazon Prime synopses, so.
They tend to be a little rambling, and they maybe sometimes say more than they should, and other times not enough, but anyway, who are we to judge? So yeah, we've got love, we've got betrayal, we've got maybe some sad. Next week's episode might be kind of heavy, who knows? But
not me.
But pretty soon we're going to just be watching sports movies, so that'll make up for it.
Yeah, those never make me cry.
Not just, but we'll say, yeah. No. Well, that's, you know, crying for different reasons. Uh-huh. Crying with joy.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to a good performance from Ron Veer.
It can sound like that's such a rare thing.
We haven't seen it. You know what I mean.
We watched Circus. Like, we're excited to see him do more.
Yes.
Do better.
Exactly. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. Just, yeah, I'm also excited for what the future holds. It's good to be back.
Good to be back. You know, sucks to be back with COVID.
Yeah, it'll be even better when you're back healthy. You'll just, yeah.
Yes, yes. Without COVID. Great. So watch, enjoy, and until next time, remember, Bollywood and Mollywood don't need us.
For sure not.
But we need both of them.
We for sure do.
And Mamoodi. Bring us more Mamoodi.
Mamoodi, just all day, every day. Yeah.